Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Today, we're going to be taking you on a journey that I would like to think will empower you as an individual with perhaps a different paradigm of thought. My guest today is Moonstone Star White. Her book is titled Highway from Hell, or you could say The High Way from Hell. Moonstone, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
You've got quite an interesting background, Moonstone. You have been involved in being a bartender, freelance artist, massage therapist. You've been an energy healer. You've been a mask maker, hypnotherapist, real estate broker. You're also an ordained minister. You've done a little bit of everything, haven't you?
Well, I guess if nothing else, I'm very eclectic. I'm always exploring new things.
And I think that's good because that enables us to grow as people. Now, I do want my audience to know that you absolutely have a passion for writing, but you are also board certified in hypnotherapy by the International Medical and Dental Hypnotherapy Association, the American Board of Hypnotherapy, and the International Hypnosis Federation. You are also a member of the International Association of Counselors and Therapists. You are a woman that has walked, as you have just said, a very eclectic path. And I want to share the disclaimer you have right at the front of the book. This book is not for the faint-hearted. It's not for the victims of the world who want to blame others for their problems. The ideas presented are based on the author's experience. Your choice to consider or use the information is your own. By reading this book, you understand and agree that neither the author nor the publisher may be held liable for your results in the application or misapplication of the information presented. Taking responsibility for yourself is the first step towards emotional freedom. You know what? You must have been talking to some lawyers somewhere.
I've seen a disclaimer
in a book for a long time.
Well, I've been seeing a little bit more of that lately, and maybe it's my real estate background, but it's always important to let people know that they are responsible for the reality that they create.
I so appreciate that because I think that that is one of the areas of life over the past 30 to 40 years that has really disintegrated. And we're coming now into a different positioning where people are saying, excuse me, but you've had this break where everybody says it's not your fault. Now it's time for you to own up and fess up. You're the person that got yourself into this mess to begin with. That's a tough one. That is really a tough one for anyone at any point in their life to acknowledge that they have a personal responsibility for the choices that they've made.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are those exceptions, but that is really a fact. What brought to you the awareness so strongly?
I think it started with such a strong passion of just wanting to be a happier person, wanting to find self-worth and value in being who I was and not being afraid to be who I was. So that led me to do a lot of different searches through personal growth workshops and books, anything that I could do, ceremonies, exploring different forms of spirituality, as I mentioned in the book, things that I did were a variety of things. I explored a women's circle that explored Wiccan traditions. I explored Native American spirituality because I lived in the Southwest and that was very available. I explored Buddhism and read the Upanishads 25 years ago or maybe even longer when I first started wanting to explore things that were different than the traditional mainstream that I'd grown up with. And I think it was just what I started realizing and the book that really made me start getting this picture a lot more quickly than I might have was reading Richard Maurice Buck's book. He wrote a book called Cosmic Consciousness, and he wrote it in the 1850s. He was a peer of Walt Whitman, so he lived during that time period.
Mm-hmm.
And it was talking about the fact that so many of us are starting to come into this what he called cosmic consciousness. Basically, it's an enlightened state of awareness while we're on the earth. and he cited Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad as being people who had been an example of that, but that the examples of that were becoming more and more frequent, and he started citing people that were more recent to our history, people like William Shakespeare and Walt Whitman. He had a whole list of them. I can't even remember who all they were now because I read the book a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I started getting the big picture right away. It's like, okay, we are evolving to a higher state of consciousness. I see this big picture, and I see that there's a real connection between all these major world religions that most people aren't getting. And to me, it's the unity of our consciousness as one, and the fact that everything we do affects everything else. So all of my explorations after that were wanting to discover how that was. And I kept trying to transcend my emotions for so many years. You know, a lot of the old texts would say you need to transcend the emotions. Well, I just didn't know how to do that. I knew I wanted to do that, but what I really didn't get was that transcending them can only happen when you've experienced what you've already created without judgment. So a lot of the seminars that I did were starting out with some things like group seminars where people would all tell their story and share what they had come up with, and the facilitator would guide you to understand that that was something that you had pulled out of your experience and created in your mind. It was a story that you made up. A lot of NLP-based things. And then I did some of the Avatar seminars in the 90s. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but that's a self-development course as well that is very powerful in helping you to become aware of how you've created your own situations. And it was really the culmination of, I would say, 15 years or so of really intense soul-searching that made me realize that I was the creator of my own reality and that victims are victims because they choose to be victims.
Many people that would listen to that would say, that's a very harsh judgment. But then your journey and your story made you aware of what you had chosen. And I think often when people like yourself will make such a statement, as you just have, it's because it took you quite a while to be able to recognize your own level of personal responsibility. I look at life as a tapestry.
Absolutely.
Sometimes we will put in a certain pattern, and then all of a sudden you go, oops, I don't think I like the one I'm making. I better undo this stuff.
Right.
And that's what I think you went through. And we all have the privilege of doing that, but it's typically not encouraged by society.
It's stuck. It's a very unpleasant thing to face. We don't want to face it when we're stuck in our stuff because the last person we want to think is at fault or that, you know, why would any sane person create a reality that's miserable for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not a rational thing and no one would do that on a conscious level. But, you know, when it comes down to the law of attraction and attracting the realities we experience, which more and more people are starting to believe is what's happening, that so much of that is happening on a subconscious level, and that's really what being a hypnotherapist has taught me, how powerful the subconscious is in creating our reality. That's why we have so much trouble reining it in and always making it happen the way we want it to, is because we still have a lot of unresolved issues that are held subconsciously that prevent us from being able to do that on a conscious level. And it's not that we're creating our victim reality on a conscious level or that we actually want it. It's just that we have belief systems in place that we're not even aware of that continue to attract it into our life.
It's quite a fascinating process. Let's talk about your name for just a moment, because you have a very lovely name, Moonstone Star White. And how did the name Moonstone, why was that chosen?
Moonstone was a name that was given to me at a retreat in the 80s that I did. It was a very small group, about six or seven people, I think, were going through the process. It was a five-day retreat. And there were probably the same number of helpers and facilitators, but everyone was given a different name when they checked in, and there were all these name badges laying on the table, and I saw the name Moonstone, and I thought, what a neat name. I wonder who was lucky enough to get that. And of course, in my self-worth at that time, I didn't believe I could have gotten that name, but those names were actually chosen for us before we got there, and that one happened to be mine. So when they gave me that name, I was, you know, it just seemed to fit. I thought, wow, how great. I love this name. So we used the names during the entire retreat because it helped you to disengage from any identity that you had about yourself so that you could let go of the past and possibly embrace a new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tool for doing that. It was something that was only intended to be used during the time that we were there. But mine just sort of stuck. I went with one of my next-door neighbors who I barely knew when we went, but we ended up becoming best friends. And afterwards, we started calling each other by our retreat names. And at the time, I was a self-employed artist, and I started signing my new artwork, Moonstone. Well, pretty soon my life partner caught on to it, and it just stuck. And a year later, I changed it legally.
Well, it's very, very, very lovely. It's very rhythmic in its sound. And I just thought I'd let you share that story with my audience, because we have changes that we put ourselves through. And sometimes that is creating a different identity for ourselves that make us feel comfortable in our own skin. Mm-hmm. You have poetry scattered throughout your book. This one, The Wizard, I enjoyed quite a bit. Again, it's right at the front of your book. Mm-hmm. I searched the world over for something to call true. For all my sorry searching, there was nothing I could do to calm the raging waters wreaking havoc in my head. I couldn't give up because, after all, where would that have led? I gazed at my reflection thinking, might as well be dead. My life has become heavy as solid yellow lead. A wizard out of nowhere did suddenly appear. He said, the magic lies within you. Start your searching here. I thought, I cried, I struggled. I didn't want to play. I said, my life is nothing. This cannot be the way. The wizard stood there beaming, his face a brilliant light. I could not help believing that maybe he was right. Gradually, the wizard's image began to disappear, and I realized I was gazing into reflective mirror. His voice had barely whispered, and he finally was gone. I shall never leave you. You and I are one. I thought that was such a delightful poem, because you have said so much in that poem. We all have the wizard within us.
Mm-hmm.
We all have the magic. And the tarot cards as a magician symbolize. When you talk to various groups, there's always a symbolism of some type or another that says you can transform. You can shift because you've got it within you. There are those that say you couldn't make the shift if you wouldn't ask the question. That's what I want to say. If you didn't have the capacity to make the shift.
I like that.
And I think that there is so much of that that occurs. What was the most difficult test for you that you went through to discover that this wizard really was you?
The most difficult test, I would say, probably, I think in terms of challenging my sense of self-worth, a lot of it was not having children, making the choice not to have children. At an early time in my life, I was 24 years old, and I had my tubes tied, and I knew in my heart that that was not a path that I was going to take in this lifetime. But then after that, having two life partners, first a marriage and then my life partner, who both had daughters that became part of my life, and being a stepmother in spite of my choice not to have my own children. And I had always thought I would adopt if I ever wanted children later, but that never ended up being part of my reality. The people I was with did not want to do that, and it just wasn't something that seemed to work its way into the pattern that my life was taking. But I would say being a stepmom has been the hardest thing for me, and I'm very grateful for the experience now, but going through it was very tough for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It really caused me to question a lot of things about myself and why I was feeling the way I was feeling, and the feeling of being left out, the feeling of being jealous, the feeling of, you know, wondering if I should have had my own kids. It really challenges your sense of security.
Mm-hmm. Because you are playing a role where you typically are the outsider. You
mm-hmm.
are not the mother. There is not supposedly that physiological bond because you didn't birth these children. But the truth is, all of those emotions are there even if you are a mom to your own kids. You can have all of that same stuff.
Well, I was I felt a lot better when a real mom told, when a birth mom told me that once. For a long time, I thought it was just something I felt because I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, it can happen to anyone. But it was something that I think I had a hard time forgiving myself for a long time, because my first husband, who was a wonderful man, wanted to have children, and I did not. And I also saw us going in different directions spiritually, because he was a staunch Catholic and always would be. And And I respected that, but it wasn't how I wanted to go. And I just, as wonderful of a person as he was, I just saw our lives diverging. And I think I always had some guilt about the fact that he had wanted children and I had not. And I think that complicated my ability to live as a stepmom later, too.
You make some very profound statements in your book. One is, the skill of learning is to live according to the fresh input of each moment is training for life. It is meditation in action. It is the source of power. It is the frontier of the miraculous. What made you come to that awareness?
I think everything that I have done, it's really, I started just, I would almost say channeling the information for this book. It wasn't something I just sat down and wrote and thought, now I've got it figured out. I would have these realizations or glimpses of these realizations, and then they would, you know, they would get brighter, and then they would fade and go away, and I'd have another drama to live out. But as I started becoming more and more aware, some of my old identities just started slipping away, and it became less important to hold on to them. And it became more important to see myself in other people, to be able to compassionately imagine what it might be like to be them. Because that's where we really get on the level of being able to be in what I would call more of a collective mind. And that's by being able to put yourself in the position that other people's, that you imagine that other people might be in.
Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the biggest challenges in life, because so often we are indoctrinated with particular attitudes or feelings, and this is normal. I mean, you grow up with family. You've got
we can't help it.
Yeah, it's just a part of it. So to question, as you were doing, as you mentioned right at the beginning when we were talking, you question this and you question that, but to find the answers, you had to step away from what was considered the black and white. And that was quite a challenge. That is a challenge to anybody, even today, because that is going to put you on a path of self-discovery of your own individuality. Mm-hmm. And when you step on that path, there are no Oscars waiting for you at the end of the road.
Boy, that's for sure. Well, and I have a family of very conservative religious siblings. I mean, most of my siblings are very conservative and traditional and still to this day do not get what I'm about. They want to understand how I can possibly be at peace with it, but they can't imagine that I am or that I could possibly be okay. So there's always this concern from them that, you know, I haven't quite seen what they've seen, that I don't quite get it, and, you know, I probably feel the same way, but I'm okay with the fact that we don't see things the same way and they're not. But that has been, it's been, like you said, it was a real challenge to step away from that because there was a lot of indoctrination. And for a long time, I had to explore past it in some way tangentially, on a tangent, reflected to Christianity because I wasn't safe leaving that in the beginning. I had such a strong indoctrination that that's where I started. But I started reading books about Edgar Cayce, the clairvoyant in the 1930s who did trance readings for people. And he had a strong Christian background, and he was the first person I read who said, well, Jesus talked about reincarnation, the Bible is very metaphysical, and he had all these ideas that put Jesus into a whole different light than I had ever grown up with. And that was where I really started thinking, wow, maybe this is really the direction that I'm feeling I need to be drawn in, because something had never felt right about what I learned growing up. It just didn't feel right to me, and I was always questioning that, and I think that's really where it started, was questioning that and thinking that there was something that people were missing, or there was something that I was missing. I wasn't seeing the peace in the people around me that I wanted to have.
And again, that's part of the journey. Without the questioning, you don't go anywhere.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that maybe want to question. That's what I think is very good about your book, because you bring up different points. And I always say learning is a process. It's sort of like a cow chewing its cud. You might find that you're okay with certain parts, but you decide you don't want to chew on a new idea or a new experience for a while. And if you do, you want to chew on it so it's so thoroughly chewed.
Right.
You may find you chew on it, and then it just doesn't settle right. So like a cow, cow's got, what, four stomachs? You pop it into a new stomach, and you start all over again to recycle it. And I really think that this is something that's very hard, Because so typically we are told this is black, this is white, this is green, this is purple. Well, any artist will tell you, you've got an infinite amount of shades that you could make. In fact, some people might walk up to an artist that has a fabulous painting and say, how'd you do that? Where did you get that shade? Can you do it again? They'll say, I don't think so.
And that brings up a point. You know, being an artist is about being present with whatever, if you're doing, especially if you're doing realism, that you are looking at something with an eye that is different than the person that normally looks at something. The reason most people can't paint or draw is because they look at something and they see something that's an idea of what they have in their mind. They don't see what's actually there. The shadows in the cup that they're trying to paint might actually be purple. And a real artist might paint them purple and you look at it and see it as a dark shadow. You don't see it as purple. But a person who doesn't have that eye, who can't see it for what it is going to try to assign a color to it that's not really there. And it's not going to look real.
It's just like pink snow in Alaska. You will see pink snow, folks. You really will.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Let's talk about the four aspects of experience. Mind, spirit, body, and heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a chapter that you devote to this, and you talk about the flow of feeling. And that was one of the difficult challenges that you had to deal with, was cracking the crust that you had built around yourself to get back in touch with certain feelings. Boy, that is a journey. I've been there. I know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about Ajax. Tell us a little bit about him.
My horse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a horse my dad got from an auction when I was about 10 years old, and I rode him for quite a few years during my pre-adolescent and adolescent years. We used to go on rides through the timber and things like that with clubs, and I really enjoyed him. He was a very spirited horse like I was. He liked to run. I liked to run. My dad always used to say that I just was a natural on the horse and that we were just made for each other. But he was intimidating to people that weren't used to him. And that horse was a horse that I never really lost him while I was living at home, but my parents sold him when I was grown up, and they didn't need him anymore. My dad had sold the horses and didn't have his either, so he had sold Ajax to a neighbor. And the neighbor had it for several years, and his two daughters enjoyed it. He had a couple of twins that rode it and really enjoyed it. And then he sold it to someone else, who ended up, I heard from my parents years later, who ended up selling him for dog food. And I was so appalled when I heard that. I just broke down. My folks were so upset when they told me and realized how upset I was that I had never wanted to hear that story. Because that's what they did with horses. When no one wanted them anymore, they would just ship them off and they would make them into dog food or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't allow myself to really experience the pain of that, because I had really had a special bond with that horse, and I just thought they had sold it, you know, which they had, and that everything, you know, he'd grown old and whatever. But then I saw the movie Black Beauty about 5 years later or so, and it brought up a tremendous surge of emotion about this horse that I'd grown up with, and I didn't realize how much I had stored there that I had not let go of until I saw the movie, because in the movie Black Beauty, he goes through a lot of things in his life, and some of them are not pleasant, some of them are, but he ends up getting turned free in his pasture, and he gets to live out his old age as a free horse with his old master, which is a wonderful ending. And when I saw that movie and got done at the end, all this emotion about Ajax just came up, and I just bawled and bawled and bawled. And I couldn't even really fathom where it was coming from, except that it was very intense. But it was coming from the fact that I had really never, because my parents had been so upset when they saw how shook up I was when I heard what had happened to him. I didn't want to let them know how troubled I was by it. And it really came back to me when I saw the movie Black Beauty, which seems funny now, but I watched the movie 10 years later or so, maybe 15 years later, and it just didn't have the same impact. I had already moved through that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how synchronicity will evolve to help us get past certain things, just like that experience did for you.
I think movies can be a great tool that way.
Oh, yes. You talk about beginning where we are right now. I'm a firm believer in that. And you also make a comment in that particular chapter, to go where you don't want to be, to go on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is very, very significant, being on cue. It's the old description of facing your demons. Being able to look at it and realize that something is an experience. What are you going to take from it? What are you going to sift out of it so that you can add it into your mix of life so it serves you instead of crippling you? And I think that that's very, very important. You also say something I feel is very true. There's no person or experience you encounter that does not have something to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think is so significant. If you can just adopt that positioning, then it gives you a whole different paradigm at whatever you interact with in life.
Right. Well, we're so ready to decide what it means for us before we've ever had the experience that if we look at something that's unpleasant, a lot of times it's not as bad as we thought it was, but we've made all these judgments about it. Sometimes all that that experience is trying to teach us is humility or forgiveness or being, you know, understanding that we're no less or more than anyone else. We're all in this together. And I think that the ego doesn't want to do that. We want to compare ourselves favorably to the people around us, but that really ultimately leads to unhappiness.
And you make a comment in your book also, the need to be right can stop you from getting what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
Because we have the need to be right. The law of attraction is the force that guides us to our experiences that we think about. But a lot of that is happening subconsciously. But we have this need to be right, and a lot of our subconscious beliefs, we're not aware that we have them, but because we've attracted circumstances into our lives or we've created beliefs that we believe consciously and the world bears out our truth, we make up a story around it to fit our paradigm of what our experience is. And we don't want to question that because to be wrong is an ego-deflating experience, and most people are not comfortable with that. We spend our whole lives trying to build ourselves up and cover up our core vulnerability. And when we do things like that, it strips away all the protection, and we're left there being vulnerable. And when it comes right down to it, that's the biggest fear we all have, is being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people have had that dream of being naked in the grocery store or something similar like that, which is basically a fear of being vulnerable.
I agree. You have a cute quote in here. It's a Latin American quote. It's De medico poeta e loco, todos tenemos un poco, which means physician, poet, and lunatic. We all have a little of each. I love that. I thought that was such a good quote to use. Because we really are a composite of so many things.
Yes. And we, you know, that's what makes life interesting. And it gives us the liberty to make mistakes and be a little crazy once in a while. We don't have to be perfect all the time, and it's okay to experience the variety.
I agree. I think that that is so true. Talk about, you talk in your book about getting buttons pushed. There's a journey. You share your personal stories throughout here, just like we've been sharing on the air today. But you have these different positionings of thought that I think are very good to just be aware of, because whenever we get into a particular complacency, thinking that that's all there is, we don't need to grow anymore, what are we going to be able to experience? We have so much change that's occurring in the world right now. If we're not willing to grow and expand ourselves as people, we're really going to be on the short end. You need to tell me why you chose the title Highway from Hell. Why that title was your choice?
Well, I had thought about a lot of different ones. I had started out with the title something like Feeling Your Way to Higher Self. And I liked that, but then I realized that it was just too similar to everything else that was out there. And I wanted something with a little bit more attention-getting quality. I've wondered since then if it was the best title for the book, because it tends to, I sometimes wonder if the people who would appreciate the book, people who are into New Age thought or more alternative spiritualities, those kinds of people would like the book, but it may alienate them if they think it sounds too religious. And religious people, of course, question it because it doesn't sound traditional enough to them either. But I like it because the hell is the hell that we create in our own minds. All of the misery that we experience are because of the judgments we've created about the experiences that we're having in the first place. And the highway is getting to the place where you understand that you created that and being in your higher self state, which is being more intuitive, letting go of the judgment, allowing yourself to just experience what's right in front of you. That is the highway, and it's the highway from hell, because once you can take away the judgment and experience what you've attracted into your life, you're going to be able to let go of it. And if you don't, it's going to keep coming back to haunt you over and over.
You'll be on that highway loop that keeps repeating itself over and over.
Yeah, kind of like one of those clover leaves, I guess, where you just keep getting back on the same exit all the time.
Absolutely. Been there, done that. Moonstone, it's been delight having you as a guest. We're out of time. Do you have your website that you can give us quickly that people can visit if they so desire?
Yes, it's www.spiritwindpublishing.com.
Spiritwindpublishing.com.
That's right.
Highway from Hell, Moonstone Star White. It will take you on a journey that will allow you to explore in a safe way. This is Donna Sebo. Moonstone, again, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you
so
much, Donna.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
582-5604. Hello, and phone lines are open. That's right. And if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do exactly that. Now, here are the toll-free numbers you can call in to. USA 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So you can call any of those numbers and be able to get through to me. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, just know that as a mental practitioner psychic, I am delighted to give you my mental impressions. I consider myself an information resource. So when you call in, I'm going to ask you for your first name or your initial, and of course I always want to know where you're calling from. And after I finish giving you my impressions, then you're welcome to ask me about anything that you want to know about. That's simple. Well, I'm sure there's so many of you, just like me, that have been, when you're watching television, seeing all of this stuff about the new Indiana Jones movie, and I had a friend talking to me about it today saying, you know, it's really a good movie. It's a fun movie. And I have been seeing programs on archaeology. There's all of this about the crystal skull, and there's so much information. The History Channel has even had a number of shows that are being done on archaeology, the crystal skull, so on and so forth. Well, these are always subjects of interest. And archaeology, I have been getting so much material regarding that. It's a fascinating field because today, archaeology, they still dig in the dirt, but there are so many technological tools available to people that are the treasure hunters, the Indiana Jones, male and female both, that are going all over the world to check out different things. And we are finding so many places with this technology that, my goodness, 20 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to do it. 30 years ago would have been considered impossible. And 50 years ago, they would have just called it science fiction. It is amazing what we were able to do. And part of the technology that they have, of course, is the global positioning system via satellite. And they're discovering all kinds of things on this planet of ours whose age is really causing a lot of questioning. And I think we're going to see over the next, 20 to 30 years and on, a lot of changes in what was known as history, whether it has to do with Egypt, South America, China, I don't care. There is so much information that is coming out because we are having access, especially through technology. Now, there is something new. They judged this monument to be about 5,500 years old, and it was uncovered recently just a few hundred miles northwest of Lima, Peru. They think, they don't know, they think it might be the oldest settlement in the Americas. What they have discovered, and I've got this picture in front of me, it is just incredible. They have this circular space. It is good size, and it was built of stones and adobe. They think it was a social and religious gathering area. There's a German archaeologist, Peter Fuchs, who led the digs excavation team. Now, they have found other places nearby, a city of Corral, and they've also found a 3,600-year-old adobe carving of a human sacrifice. They're finding that in the Americas, there were booming cultures, civilizations that were absolutely coming into their own and thriving along with Mesopotamia and other parts of the world. There is so much we're discovering. I think it's exciting, don't you? It displaces a lot of myths. And let's face it, you can have a theory on just about anything. But lots of times to be open to the possibility that your theory may not be correct, that there is other information out there that may open up to a whole new world, a whole new paradigm of thought. Well, it's happening right here, right now, and it's exciting. But it's a tough sell for a lot of people in many aspects of science because they've bought into a certain type of theory and thought, and to break out of that, they really have to have what they call the hard evidence. Or I have to chuckle whenever I hear someone very opinionated and adamant about certain belief systems or understandings, because I can remember when I started in the work of mind, a good 40 years ago, the only books that were out about the mind, really, that were available to most people publicly, were the Edgar Cayce books. And there were some others that had come out, but it was just at the cutting edge of science and investigation, and it's just marvelous what we have been able to evolve to, because now it's no big deal in the minds of most people. You'll still find some individuals that have a very hard-nosed, determined attitude of, oh, this is bad, and oh, this is this, and this is that. But when you start to talk to them, many times they've had their own special experiences with dreams or whatever. So we are in a fascinating time frame. But I say to you when I'm talking this way, don't ever hesitate to question. It's a good thing to question. You know, our guest mentioned that. She started her journey because she had a lot of questions. Maybe people just said to her, this is the way it is, and you don't ask questions. I know what's right for you. This is it. Well, maybe that wasn't the case. And one of the things I had to learn to do was to ask questions. That was something that wasn't allowed for me in my home when I was growing up. you were considered rude. It just wasn't the girl thing to do. Guys could do that, but even then, they often, the males even, were put into positions where they'd say, sorry, but this isn't acceptable. Well, finally, we are breaking that taboo. And the questioning is good. And you take a look at our young people today, the children today. When you can sit down and have an intelligent conversation with three-year-olds, you know something's going on. And that I have had personal experience with. Three-year-olds, five-year-olds, eight-year-olds. These kids have a capacity for doing and accomplishing far beyond what we would have ever envisioned them capable of doing. So there's so much that we have to change in our thinking and in our paradigms to be able to grow into this new space, this new place, understanding the value of the mind, understanding the value of learning, understanding it on whole new levels and bringing new life into it. It's quite an adventure living in this time frame. Speaking of adventure, let's talk about rescuing the reef. You know, the coral reefs have been called the rainforests of the ocean because they have such a biodiversity. And genetically, they are just absolutely priceless. Now, we have been seeing a lot of these ecosystems, these coral reefs, dying away. And there's about a quarter of them, to the best of their knowledge, that are gone. They have just disappeared. Well, there is a community of people who are paying attention. Let's face it, we are now in a cycle of learning and growing and understanding that when we harm the earth that we live on, we harm ourselves. So there's a marine biology community that is really wanting to bring reefs to good health. However, the biologists involved in this must understand what's causing the destruction. And it's not necessarily global warming. It can be overfishing. There can be new predators that have come into the environment. There also can be diseases. So they're checking this all out. Now, there are some things that man has done that's created the changing. And, yes, there is warming of water. I have a personal opinion on that. I think it might be due to a volcanic activity. We've got a lot of volcanic activity that's going on, and nobody talks about that. Well, all you need is a little rift with a lot of that hot stuff coming out into the water, and you're going to have a warm stream pretty fast. You know, there's microalgae that is needed to keep the reefs healthy, to keep them strong. And there's a study led by the University of Queensland in Australia that said that CO2 released in the course of coral death not only raises temperatures, but also makes water acidic. And it leaves the reefs brittle and also very vulnerable to predators. So they are just really checking things out. Overfishing has an effect. Healthy populations of fish eat seaweed, and it keeps the plants in balance. Now, as the fish populations are diminishing, seaweed has increased. Human sewage being in the water, without the fish to eat the seaweed strangles the coral reefs. It's quite interesting. We've got a tremendously complicated ecosystem. We're learning about it every day. Fortunately, again, we're taking time to learn and to try to find out what we can do to make a difference, to make changes. I think that's exciting. I think you should feel that way, too. This is Donna Seaborn. We're going to take a break for a moment. When I come back, I'm going to talk to you about the go-to girls. I started the story the other day, and we ran out of time. But if you want to give me a call, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Give me a buzz. I'll light up your life with a little insight. Donna Seaborn here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make
Donna
a difference
Sebo
for you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I know that we've got a caller on the line, but before we go to that caller, I want to tell you, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Alan Davidson. This is a fascinating man. We're going to be talking about body brilliance. His book, I'll tell you, is one of the most beautifully done books I have ever seen. And he is going to be with us. He has an extraordinary story to tell. And then on Friday, I'm going to be flying back east, and we're going to have a Best of Donna on. And next week, we're going to be talking with a psychic, Noreen Rainier, a mind for murder. Yes, and she's a psychic detective. She's the only woman that's ever taught at the FBI. Then we're going to be talking with Bonnie Gordon Lucas on Tuesday, getting better with communication. These are very special cards that she designed for people that are ill. And then a face value, Carol Harper. This is a woman whose story, whose personal story, is absolutely incredible. She's going to be on. And then we'll be talking about Teresa Tapp. Boy, this gal keeps us in shape, and I love her physical program. And we're going to be talking about how to really banish the bumps. So you gals are going to be interested in that. And then award-winning green roof designs. Fascinating topic. It is being done all over the world. And Stephen Peck is going to be my guest. So we've got a lot of good things to talk about. Tell your friends. And remember, you can always get the shows on the archives, too. This is Donna. Let's go to our first caller for the day. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Kathy from Merced, California.
Hi, Kathy. I'm sorry, dear. I couldn't hear you. Your voice is so faint. Where?
Is that?
Oh, that's much better. Oh, you sound fabulous now. Okay, where are you in California?
Merced.
Merced. Okay. First thing, Kathy, that I am looking at is, clarity is a word, and I'm getting it in bold print in my mind, and I feel as if there is almost like a fog that has been in your mental environment, and the clarity that you really need to have, it's almost as if you're afraid to see it, because if you see it, it means you might have to let something go. And that is not something you may want to do. So as I look at this, I would say don't be afraid. If you have to maybe talk with one person or another person to get the clarity that you need to look at pros and cons, that is very healthy. There is nothing wrong with that. That will enable you to break through in a big way. Have you ever watched people that are doing karate chops with boards?
Yes.
Okay, it's as if I'm seeing you trying to do the board chop, and your hand is just pulsing, nothing's giving. But what you haven't done is focused through seeing the break. You are stopping short of what needs to be looked at so you can make your breakthrough. And this is just, I think, part of a learning curve here. It's not good, it's not bad. It's just part of learning. And once you get it, once you have the clarity, you're going to make a clean break, and things are going to move very quickly. It wouldn't surprise me if you made the breakthrough within about 2 weeks, but this isn't going to be the only breakthrough that you're going to make. You're going to have literally 6 breakthroughs before the end of summer, and you're going to look back after you've made each break, and you'll go, wow, I didn't realize that that's all I had to do. And so with each one that you make, it's going to be easier. Your clarity, your discipline with clarity is going to go right through. You're going to find it carrying you right through. What's on your mind, dear? What did you want to ask me about today?
Well, and that's basically it. I'm just having a real time with my emotions and working to... clarity would be... It's a precise way of explaining it.
All right, let me ask you a question. And you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. What would you say is the biggest issue that you're looking at this time that emotionally is just driving you nuts?
The biggest one?
Mm-hmm.
Is really letting go of what doesn't belong to me, you know, that belongs to other people, not enabling, just being right for me and letting go of what belongs to others.
Well, I think you ought to sit down and write a story. And this may sound a little corny, but I think you and God just need to have a quiet time. And that may sound a little melodramatic, but I really mean it. Sit down and write your story out. Write out your feelings. Write out about the feeling that, oh, I want to own this. I want this. This is mine. Write out whatever comes into your head. Nobody's there to judge it. And that's, I don't want you to judge what you write either. But after you write it and put down exactly how you feel, if you're angry, if there is a childlike side of you that comes out, and all of a sudden, memories might start popping in. Write out what you remember. Write out what comes through when you're doing this. If you say, gee, it's hard for me to start with a pen on a piece of paper, just start talking about how you feel at the moment and write out that. I'm having a tough time writing this out on this piece of paper. It's very difficult for me. But just start. Because once you do it, you want to make sure you're not interrupted. Once you do this, then it begins the flow. And you must have a quiet space. It probably would be done best in the evening. Don't have a radio on unless you have just real soft, soft music playing in the background. And I'd make it classical music. I'd just keep it very soft, no rock and roll, because you want to flow here. And it could be sounds like maybe water, ocean sounds. Have something like this. You want it very soft and very much in the background. So you write out your story. And you put it down. And maybe you've got pages of this. And finally you realize that you've finished your story. And again, I don't want you to judge the story. Then I want you to rewrite your story. Then I want you to write it how you want to handle things. This is going to be part of the breaking of the board. It's not all of it, but it's part of it. There's something that happens when you write between the emotional self and the mind and the nervous system of the body. It gives you freedom.
I love it. Thank you.
And I think that can help you, hon. I really do.
Well, I look forward to it.
Yes, because this is your stuff. It's not anybody else's. And it will, I think, acquaint you with a little bit of yourself that maybe you have chosen to close down on. And you need to know, the truth is, none of us own a thing. We really don't. We don't own anything in this life. We are merely custodians. And we can be a good custodian, or we can be a lousy custodian, or something in the middle. But the reality is, you don't come in with anything in this life, and when you pass out of this life, you don't take anything with you but what you have attained in wisdom and knowledge.
Well, I really respect that. Thank you.
You are welcome. You have a good day, Kathy.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, dear. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're just about of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I say that at the end of the show because I really believe that. All of us have our stories. All of us have our journeys. And it's up to us to realize that we can give them value and purpose, and we do have choice. This is Donna Sebo. Tune in tomorrow for Body Brilliance with Alan Davidson. I'll be back here same time, same place. Bye for now.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.